Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Monday immediately after Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew. It's your economic financial power block here on WWPR from 4 to 6 every Monday. Following Talking Markets, where they cover all the markets, we focus on the weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, and more. And what happened this week? Well, Bitcoin shows strength in today's Monday trading, as we speak even. But meanwhile today, 44,000 plus Bitcoin, amounting to the equivalent of $526 million, was transferred from 9 transactions in 3 hours this morning. What does that forebode for the coming trading session? And the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission has cleared the way for crypto derivatives provider ErisX to offer futures contracts. We'll tell you what that means and the significance of that. And with Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency potentially posing a threat, China's central bank says it could hasten the development of its own digital cash. Well, the fallout from Libra keeps coming, but we have in the studio with us, well, starting with a familiar voice. And, of course, the theme from Talking Markets, they call him Andrew, we call him Andy. Hey, Andy, good to see you here
good
today.
Good afternoon, Henry.
And we held him over from the Talking Markets show by at least my popular demand, and that was their special guest today, Phil, who is... he was talking at levels of trading expertise that I could only aspire to be able to view.
Mind-boggling.
Yes.
Mind-boggling.
It was like he was...
There were brains exploding all over the world.
He was coming down from the mountaintop while I was looking at the golden calf. You know, it was... I really think I missed the gems there, but I tried. And, Phil, thank you for sticking around a few minutes. I know you're on a tight schedule.
Thanks for letting me sit in.
Well, you know, normally that mic is... held by Augie, who is out of the state right now, and I guess you're a little bit of a contrarian about Bitcoin the way he is, too. Is that, am I misstating anything?
I'm probably on the bearish side at the moment.
Okay. Not as contrarian as Augie, just a little more bearish and skeptical, I guess.
Well, it's going higher.
It's looking pretty good.
Looking good.
I think I'm calling every short-term low when I divest part of my portfolio and then come back in at the next stair step up. But that's okay.
As long as you're making money, that's all that counts.
Well, I had so much, such a good return in on that first big dip when we went down almost, well, past 7,500 that I, you know, following SeekingCryptos.com Talking Markets advice, you know, you got to take profit.
That's it.
And then, you know, once it goes sideways for a while, I feel more comfortable. I feel more comfortable getting out when it's dropping like an elevator. And then I feel more comfortable hopping back on when it's like on one of those airport conveyor belts that take you across the airport.
Yeah, it's like taking the stairs up and then you open the elevator and there's no cab there and you still step in.
Yeah. Well, sometimes that happens to me. Some days, too. Lots of news coming on, but let me just, we'll get into the price of Bitcoin in general, but Phil, on the previous show, just to bring people up to speed, you were talking about some of the vehicles that you trade on in the stock market and the futures market. I'm not really going to actually try and explain that for this audience, but you also talked about when you got into Bitcoin, and, you know, you were an avid trader, I take it, and he's nodding his head.
Yes.
Thank you. Now you mainly, if you're going to trade, which you're not, well, I'm not saying you are, but you would trade, I believe you said, on the CME Futures platform. Is that correct?
I trade the last crypto trades I've done were through TD Ameritrade. They trade the futures. They're so much easier than the two-factor authentication and all the, you know, the logging in and logging out. I think they're probably more secure too.
But don't you miss the thrill of seeing Bitcoin plunging on the weekend and you not being able to do anything about it?
I think actually I can do something about it.
Oh really?
Yeah,
what do you do?
It's 23 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Not on Saturdays.
Yeah, I think so.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, the futures? I thought
it was, yeah. The Bitcoin futures, I think, is 23 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Oh, so you'd be as sleep deprived as the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's good to know. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into whatever.
Who's that calling you at 3 in the morning? Oh, it's the Bitcoin alert, babe. Let's go back to bed.
7 o'clock. 7 o'clock a.m. on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
We're buying, what, Bitcoin on some exchange in Japan and selling it in frickin' Munich or something?
It just came down from 20,000. We got to jump
on. Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day, that's right.
I'm sure you guys sold it the pig.
We only had to make eight separate trades to pick up one ARB. Sell to Tether.
Alright, well, speaking of selling to Tether, that actually might be part of the discussion somewhere down the road here on this. Anyway, Bitcoin against the U.S. dollar hit past significant psychological level. It had been trading below 11,500 at the start of today. It's now trading over 12,000. Almost everything I put in this rundown a few hours ago is now out of date because they're all talking about the 12,000 mark. We've passed that. Everything's sunny and bright in crypto world, although we don't really know why, as we usually don't on these days. But in a singles morning activity on derivatives giant BitMEX, which I know Andy follows constantly, is the traders lost $44 million on the short side.
That's just nuts.
And
200 to 1 leverage. You know what it is? What you did is you have how many millions?
44 million.
So you had
that's actually sort of a small.
You had a million traders in there with $44 leverage 200 to 1. That's how they lost $44 million.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean that's what they're doing. They're going on these exchanges with $200 and $500, and then they leverage it 200 to 1. So you're moving a lot of Bitcoin, and you're just hoping you're right. You're looking for that lottery.
Yeah, but it's okay because if you can't cover it, they just take it from all the other traders who didn't bet.
The clawback. The clawback.
It's true.
Called the clawback. The exchanges never lose.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, are we coming out this? It's every 2 weeks. Maybe I should be asking Phil, since he follows the Bitcoin futures. It's this weekend we'll have expiration for one of the futures. Isn't the middle and the end of the?
The last time I was in the Bitcoin futures, it expired without my knowledge. I was using the TVIX futures expiration date, assuming they were all the same, and they're not. But the Bitcoin futures, it expired at the end of June. The TVIX was expiring in the middle of June. So I'm assuming that the next futures expiration for Bitcoin will be at the end of July.
I was going to say it's twice a month, yeah.
Second weekend and the final weekend. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? That was when they had the CME.
Well,
who knows?
Anyway, if it is the second weekend,
usually it's it should be the third weekend.
Well, they do have weeklies, but I don't trade those. I figure they're too thin. Yeah, there were weeklies on TDA, but I was trading only the monthly because I'm looking for a little more liquidity.
Well,
traded 20 contracts.
We're looking for
contracts.
The whale sightings as we go into these because that's usually a heads up. And that's what I was thinking going into this next mini article here is we're coming up. If I had been correct, that this weekend would be one of the expirations for the futures, because 2 weeks ago, going into the first, we had a lot of movement around the price of Bitcoin, and then the 2 weeks before that, the last expiration before that, and it seems like going into these, whenever there's been a lot of move in the middle of the period, we get a sudden move around.
July 26th is when the futures.
Oh, not until then.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then maybe these whales were just moving their Bitcoin because they wanted. But anyway, today, according to Whale Alert, the aptly named Whale Alert signal, 44,249 Bitcoin amounting to $526 million was transferred within 3 hours. Now, what made this suspicious to some was that there were 9 separate transactions, all just under 5,000 Bitcoin. Because I guess if you're transferring less than 5,000 Bitcoin, it's really like not transferring anything. But the one was sent to a known Huobi wallet, and one was sent to a known Bitfinex wallet, but the rest were all unknown wallet-to-wallet transfers. And
we're getting all kinds of phone calls in here.
Yes. Hey, they need to call back on the telephone line, though, and not my cell phone. But so I guess that probably, we'll just put that off, that they were all getting their money out of their wallet. But if you're transferring your Bitcoin from one unknown wallet to another unknown wallet, your 4,792 Bitcoin or whatever the actual transaction number was on these individual transactions, I wonder if those are like the over-the-counter settlements that we're hearing. You know, like Coinbase has their over-the-counter trading desk, and I think Fidelity has that now. They're doing it for their big clients.
Yep.
That would make more sense on why this happens.
Or an arms purchase.
What you'd want to worry about is when you see $100 million of Tether being deposited into Bitfinex, or $500 million of Tether, whatever they printed last night, being put in there, because that is what they would use to short the Bitcoin, right?
Or buy it.
Well, yeah, if they're buying Bitcoin, that's fine, I'm on.
Yeah, TD Ameritrade actually interviewed Jesse from Kraken, and they asked him about that. They said, all this money's moving from Tether, they just printing it. He goes, well, I think pretty much all the exchanges are. We're all seeing a huge inflow of money, and that's probably what you're seeing. And he goes, Tether's a very small part of our trading, but you can only trade Tether dollar there. But he said there's a lot of money coming into our exchange. There's a lot of momentum, a lot of cash flow coming in. So
I saw another article similar to that that said Tether gets these pre-orders where their big clients, I guess they're Tether whales.
Yeah, Tether whales.
Are saying they're going to need $100 million of Tether or $10 million of Tether or accumulated, you know, across a number of these big clients, we need 500 million new Tether because we want to go into the market with it. And then, of course, Tether is accepting hard currency, I'm sure, of hundreds of millions of dollars and therefore printing a one-to-one correspondence. And
it's out in the other room.
That's where we print the Tether. It's out in the other room.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let us know if there's paper towels.
You put a dollar in, and just like, you know, almost like a Coca-Cola can, you get a Tether comes out of the bottom.
I heard you get changed in Libra coin. Yeah. You put a Tether and you get Libra change.
Well, actually, you get 3/4. And a nickel slug for your dollar. We digress.
Yeah.
But anyway, I found that fascinating because I sort of wondered how they decide. I sort of intuitively knew that if you're going to print more Tether, unless you're just like printing it out of nowhere to put into the marketplace, somebody has to be sending you some significant money.
A lot of money.
And it seemed like a lot of money to all of a sudden, boom, we're going to, you know, print 500 million a day, but if you get pre-orders and there's that much forethought going into it, I don't know if it makes me feel any more secure about it.
Yeah, you got a million people, you know, putting $500 in there, it's $500 million.
But you know, a lot of places don't have access to Tether. Places like Argentina and Venezuela, the average person, the little people.
Yeah.
And they can get their bitcoins from something called local bitcoins. Many people already heard of this. Well, it turns out it's called local bitcoins, but it's considered a Finnish, as in Finland, peer-to-peer exchange. But I guess if it's peer-to-peer, is it really anywhere?
Yeah.
It's just somebody in Finland is getting a piece of the action, I think, is how that makes it Finnish.
Tony in New York's getting a piece of the action.
Bjorn.
Yeah.
Bjorn. Bjorn and Tony.
No, Bjorn don't sign it. He's not getting no action.
Yeah.
You got Bjorn as a name. You're not getting
it. It's sunny.
Bjorno.
It's sunny all day long in Finland right now. Maybe that's why the volume is so high on the local bitcoins. Anyway, local bitcoins had its highest weekly volume this past week ending Sunday, July 7th. Now, as in 65.6 million. Now, I guess this is real volume, because anybody that's been following the show knows we always have the fake volume and the real volume, which reflects our world these days. Fake volume, real volume, that's what we got to have. So, but people even that know the real volume, which I guess is around $500 million, maybe sometimes approaching $1 billion dollars of crypto, the $65.6 million may not sound like a lot. But when you consider this is actually peer-to-peer, as in person-to-person, as like Phil and I, or you and Phil, or Phil sells, buys it from me and sells it to you over local bitcoins, that, it takes a lot of individuals doing that to get the $65.6 million.
Especially in Argentina. That's a lot of money.
Which had its highest volume ever last week, which 15.22 million Argentine pesos. It makes your head spin, that many pesos.
How many pesos?
15.22 million Argentine pesos. Well, that's almost $364,000. That's almost like, what, 30 Bitcoin?
Yeah.
No, 300 Bitcoin, maybe.
Yeah, 300, yeah.
Well, it's still
no,
a lot of Bitcoin.
No, 30 Bitcoin.
It's a few zeros more of Bitcoin than I have. That's
30
for sure.
Bitcoin, that's what it is.
But the real number was in Venezuelan bolivars. 47 billion Venezuelan bolivars traded, and it doesn't give me the number of Bitcoin, but it's actually less Bitcoin than the previous Venezuelan high bolivars, because the depreciation or the inflation of the bolivar doesn't buy you the Bitcoin it used to.
I thought they were doing
the
an oil coin.
Bolivars are worthless now. They're I saw pictures. They're laying in the gutter. The streets are littered with them. People won't even bend over to pick them up. They have no value at all.
Well, I would believe that. All you gotta, but, you know, evidently all you have to do is pick up 47 billion of them, and you're at least going to get some Bitcoin for it.
Okay.
47 billion.
I mean, who in Venezuela actually would accept, if you got Bitcoin in Venezuela, why would you take a bolivar? Unless you're like the secret police trying to sting somebody. Anyway, the local Bitcoins lost a portion of its trader because they removed their in-person cash trading form from its services back in the beginning of June. Evidently, at one point, you could actually meet someone with your cash through local Bitcoin, sort of like the Craigslist of Bitcoin, and bring your cash. And I don't know, I guess they would, you'd bring your hardware wallet too and then transfer the Bitcoin into it. But they've gotten into a little bit of a problem with the regulatory environment on that. And so they don't do that anymore. So now it's, you know,
in Venezuela?
In local Bitcoins. It's a decentralized application that allows peer-to-peer transactions. It's sort of like a cross between eBay, Match.com, and Craigslist for Bitcoins.
Okay.
Yeah. I can... we need the webcam for this show.
Peer-to-peer Bitcoin transfers are okay now in America, right?
But not for real cash.
Oh.
Phil's right. This guy's got a wheelbarrow full of bolivar all bundled up. It's packed full, overflowing, and it says $3.
Oh, he can... I wonder what a Coke goes for. Coca-Cola. Not Coke. Coke, but never mind.
Two wheelbarrows, please.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, at one time, you know, at one time, it's sad because one bolivar was worth $6.
Well, I also saw, it's not in the rundown here, but Maduro has announced that he wants to allow regular everyday Venezuelans to own the Petro now, too.
Oh, yeah.
Since the Petro is their new Venezuelan crypto.
Yeah.
Right, which I don't think he has successfully traded with anyone. We actually, I'm just foreshadowing a little bit, because damn, I actually have a story here from foreignpolicy.com. If you don't know what Foreign Policy magazine is, you know, it's like what the elite, the people at the State Department and government and you know, in Brussels and the EU, they read that stuff, and, you know, people are considered experts and should be in think tanks. Well, there's an article about Facebook Libra in there, and it actually is having some ramifications throughout the global elite and the governing global elite, and what it means and how much they feel threatened by that. But I just want to...
That big guy that looked like out of the Superman movie.
What does the article say?
Well, it's quite a long article, but one of the things that ties in with this peer-to-peer is that although Facebook says, you know, this is for to help bank the unbanked. That's what we're. That's the altruistic, noble thing that they all want to do, bank the unbanked. For people like in Venezuela, you know, they don't have a good currency. They say, but at the same time, they say they're going to meet all the Know Your Customer anti-money laundering regulations for all these other countries they do. And they're saying, I'm picking Venezuela, but they're saying in any country such as Venezuela in general, they're not going to be able to, the everyday citizen is not going to be able to provide the kind of identification and verification to meet anti-money laundering standards. So what Facebook's aspirations are, which we've talked for a lot of months on this show about, is something much higher, and it's why the global central banks are starting to look at it as a threat to their order of things. But, yeah, these same people were, if they could actually prove their identity and it was an ongoing thing, Libra for Venezuela would be a great thing because then you could buy your Coca-Cola and your hot dog at the local hot dog stand.
Yeah, but how do you get paid? If their money, I guess that's the question. Huh? If their money's worthless, I guess they got to trade for other currencies.
There's nobody in Venezuela that could afford one Libra.
Yeah. I mean, how do they get their cash?
Actually, we don't even know what a Libra is going to be worth yet. So
doesn't matter. They still can't afford it.
Well, you know, somebody
be worth a bun, a German bun.
Somebody has something of value, as in food.
Sure.
And if you could, if they were willing to trade it for a Libra, some Libra, because they can then turn to the wholesaler who is willing to sell it for Libra, then you've got an ongoing transaction. But the point they're making is that they're not going to unbank the unbanked and comply with the global anti-money laundering standards. You're not going to reach 1.7 billion people like that.
I'm assuming every country has its own FINRA and its own KYC. So when you say they're going to comply with jurisdictional money laundering standards, are you saying that Facebook and its partners in the U.S. are going to comply with the KYC requirements in Uganda and Nairobi and Iran and Iraq?
They are going to
be impossible.
We had a story last week that I forget the acronym that was named for the global task force on this, but there were 37 countries of the developed world that participate in this. They don't take the recommendations from this organization direct into law, but they use those recommendations as guidelines for their laws. Some of them are already much beyond that. And this task force had just a couple weeks ago gave out their latest recommendations for how to implement cryptocurrency and maintain that kind of security for anti-money laundering. And so that's who Facebook is going to try and comply with. They're probably not really worried about Uganda's compliance because what is Uganda going to sanction Facebook with? But the other companies, other countries, yes, they could sanction.
So it depends on the country.
So an international standard will be set up.
Yeah, and one of the more disturbing things about it is that, okay, so you are going to send me money, Bitcoin, from your exchange to me. But you're going to send it to my wallet. Your exchange, to be in compliance, has to identify who you sent it to. Now, they are allowed the possibility of being mistaken, but they still have to have a mechanism in place to try and figure out who you're sending it to me. Because if you're not going to send it to, like, if you're not at Coinbase sending it to Kraken, because Kraken knows who I am, but if you're sending it to me as an individual wallet somewhere, then you get into a real sketchy ground on what has been the normal Bitcoin environment. So, let's get this one commercial in. I mean, one before we go to the commercial. This U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission has cleared the way for crypto derivatives provider ErisX. Phil is on his way to an important meeting. And thank you for sticking around for a little bit extra. And way for crypto's derivatives provider ErisX to offer future contracts with a new license approval Monday. Harris, this was actually last Monday. It happened as we were speaking almost last
week.
This is the
physically settled one.
Yes. It's backed by U.S. brokerage TD Ameritrade. And this gets a little bit into the acronym zoo here. It was granted a derivatives clearing organization, a DCO license. And it also was given a second designated contract market license, a DCM, which that means the company can now launch crypto futures product and doing the settlement with Bitcoin.
Physical.
Real Bitcoin, the real stuff. Yeah. Well, you might be wondering, well, how come they can do that? In fact, the New York Stock Exchange backed one is still screwing around with stuff. Well, BACT is still waiting on the New York State license to be able to do this. But evidently, TD Ameritrade wasn't too worried about being compliant in New York State as long as they got the Commodities and Futures Trading Commission. And the other interesting thing about this is the waiver that they got from the Commodities, Futures, and Trading Commission. They got a letter of no action relief from the CFTC for certain aspects of its offering. A no action relief is when you believe your product can fit with the spirit of the law, but not necessarily the letter of the law.
I wonder if they hand those down at the local police station.
I think that would make the
perfectly
judicial
sense. I need one of those.
We could grease the skids of the judicial system
exactly.
with that and really save the taxpayer money. According to the letter, ErisX now has a relief from regulations that require it to. And just if you can remember that long ago, think about that explanation I was trying to give about the new requirements for anti-money laundering. But this is what ErisX is relieved from. Conducting stress testing on its financial resources. Maintaining liquidity to fulfill its obligations during a one-day settlement cycle. Requiring periodic financial reports from all of its clearing members. Conducting individual stress testing on large traders. Produce daily reports on margin payments and end-of-day positions. And detail its margin methodology. Well, how did they get away with this? I mean, how did they get relief from all this? Well, because they're not allowing margin positions. So unlike BitMEX with its 100-to-1 margin positions, which I'm sure, are they in Mexico?
Yeah, I think so.
So I'm sure as they comply with all the rigorous Mexican regulations, ErisX does not have to do that in the U.S. because, A, they don't allow for margin positions. They certify all traders before they can become traders on the system.
Yeah, they have 250,000.
And, you know, they know them. They know them.
Yeah.
They're not going to do anything.
So they're
like
pretty
that.
Much trading Bitcoin. If there's no margin, there's no leverage. It's
one-to-one.
One-to-one. You're pretty much trading Bitcoin. Wow, I like the loophole there.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, CFTC, they want to make those commissions.
All right. So it's really been not that busy of a news week, which is why when we come back on the break, we're going to hear why Facebook and Libra are shaking up the foreign policy established around the world. Listening to Henry Rain Show. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Bite Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Bite Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Bite Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Bite Federal ATM near you. Go to bitefederal.com to find a location for you. That's bitefederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on The Henry Rain Show. you enjoy the trading and investment ideas you hear on Talking Markets with Mark and Andy, then you're going to want to become a member of their SeekingCryptos.com membership service. And you can join for absolutely free. When you sign up for a free membership at SeekingCryptos.com, you'll start receiving analysis and perspective by email on trade examples, cryptocurrencies, stocks, metals, educational content, and exclusive offers. SeekingCryptos.com has something for you advanced traders, too. Check out the premium membership, the expert swing trades, or the quant geeks packages. Seeking Cryptos has skin in the game just like you. They post their trades in real time, and you can follow the results right on their portfolio page. So what are you waiting for? Go to SeekingCryptos.com and sign up for your free membership now.
Alcover Massage has been providing quality massage therapy in Bradenton for over 5 years, and we are proud and excited to announce we've expanded our practice and boutique to a larger facility. Located at the historic downtown Bradenton, we're in a charming craftsman-style building across the street from the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott. Alcover Massage offers many treatment rooms, a spacious lobby, and doorfront parking spaces just for our clients. But what we're most proud of is our highly qualified massage therapist offering great service to our valued clients. Availability and instant booking is found at lauraalcover.com. Alcover Massage. Like us on Facebook, 204 13th Street West, Bradenton, Florida, 34205. Book your appointments now at lauraalcover.com or call us at 941-592-3187. MN number 34081. MA number 50525.
It's all the way up. It's all the way up. It's all the way up.
It's on the way up. Yeah, Bitcoin is retesting its highs from an hour ago.
It's trying to push higher.
Yeah. Well,
13K, here we come.
I'm sure our talking over the next couple stories will certainly push it higher. Facebook Libra, cryptocurrency, global financial interests, central banks. It's all there. It's all part of the mix. Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency is potentially posing a threat to China's central bank, they say. That's the People's Bank of China speaking at Peking. Wait a minute. I'm having a flashback here. This is from CoinDesk. They're saying Peking. That's like some 1970s.
I thought it was a dish at the China restaurant.
What happened to Beijing?
Oh, Beijing. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
well,
you know, it used to be
Hong Kong, that's for sure.
It used to be Mao Zedong, and then it was Mao Zedong, and, you know, I have to know how to do proper speak.
Tanzania.
Anyway, you say Peking, I say Beijing. University's Institute of Digital Finance, Wang Jin, who had, man, in the 90s, his hip-hop albums were just killer, let me tell you. Wang Jin, and then he got into banking.
You know, it's funny you say that, because, sorry, I had to stop, because as soon as you said that, out in Arizona, I have a friend of mine, he has a little Vietnamese coffee shop, and you go in there, and they have Vietnamese singers on there, like they're rock stars.
Yeah.
And it's exactly like what you just said. You know, they think they're rock stars. You're like, what the hell is this?
Well, you remember the big feuds between East Coast, West Coast. Well, that was nothing compared to Wang Chung, Wang Jin. When they drove by, you hit the ground,
yeah,
man.
That's right.
And the bullets were flying everywhere. Anyway, head of research bureau at the People's Bank of China said if Libra becomes widely used for international payments and effectively acts like money, quote, would it accordingly have a large influence on monetary policy, financial stability, and international monetary system? I think that was probably a rhetorical question by old Wang Jin. Anyway, they're seeing what's going on. They feel threatened by it. There were a bunch of other stories I didn't put in about Korea's worried about it, and this country's worried about it, and this. But I did come across, this was actually a story from 2 weeks ago. It was on foreignpolicy.com, and as I said earlier, that's considered like a really elite kind of, you know, global leader, kind of the real people at the top read that kind of magazine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I didn't know it existed.
Yeah, it said Facebook finally released its details. A planned payment system had been long been spoken of as a cryptocurrency. This person that writes it, David Gerard, actually is sort of a contrarian to Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, but he actually cuts through a lot of the BS about Facebook and Libra. He said they said it was a cryptocurrency in the manner of Bitcoin, but he said that makes no sense. Money transmission has strict regulatory requirements. Bitcoin wants it wide open, wants it decentralized. The only thing in common that Libra has is that the transactions take place on a blockchain, but the actual essence of the cryptocurrency is, you know, something totally different than what Libra's doing. And as I try and jump through this, which was a long article, and sort of consolidate it, one of the things I want to get to is we spent a lot of time last week with John Sacco, who we'll have back on in probably about 3 weeks or so, and we'll pick up again. And we spent a lot of time talking about the basket of assets that backs Libra. And we talked about that they say they're going to have 4 fiat currencies and then short-term debt instruments of these central banks in these currencies.
But most of them are negative interest yielding. I don't understand that.
Well, that there's plenty to talk about on that, which would be a whole show. But one of the things that I saw in an article that it's actually way down the rundown. I don't bother trying to look for it there because I can get right to the point of that. They're saying if you're a currency and you're buying stuff, you know, Bitcoin is close to being a cryptocurrency. It is in many places. It can be treated as a currency. You buy things, pay things with it. We even have a law trying to work its way through Congress very slowly to make purchases de minimis where you can get small purchases and not have to worry about capital gains. They're saying, but if Libra is a basket of multiple currencies and short-term debt instruments, that's not a cryptocurrency. That's a security. You are paying for things with a security. It would be like if I gave you a share of my mutual fund of short-term treasury bills and euro bonds.
Yeah, euro bonds.
That's yeah, and a basket of Chinese yuan bonds, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be paying you with a currency. I would be paying you with a share of a security.
You're paying me with debt.
So right away, there's a little fuzziness, if you is the best way of saying it, and downright deception if you want to take this at face value of what Facebook's face value,
yeah.
Of what they say they're doing. One of the other things that Mr. Gerard talks about is what this is supposed to do. We'll have this great leap forward that Facebook is taking the world to. At some unspecified future time, Libra hopes to offer services such as paying bills with the push of a button, buying a cup of coffee with the scan of a code, this is from their white paper, or riding your local public transit without needing to carry cash or a MetroPass. And so Mr. Gerard says, for the world outside the United States, this future is already the present. America's payment systems are underdeveloped. Chip and PIN is the norm in Europe. In fact, I had to show, when I went to visit my daughter last summer, I had my chip debit card, which would work, or credit card, which would work over there, but they made me provide them ID for a card that would insert into the reader. They wanted it to be the touch and go, kind of. Touch and pay, I should say. Not yeah. Touch and go. That happens out on the street.
Yeah,
and I deny
touch
all
and pay
of it.
Shows too, yeah.
Anyway, so the chip and pin, the norm in Europe since the mid-2000s, was broadly introduced in the last couple of years in the U.S. Citizens of other developed countries are frequently amazed that Americans don't routinely use touch to pay, which is what I was trying to say, and they still use paper checks at all. Libra has no convenience to offer international users. And everything already described is done through conventional methods. They talk about the 1.7 billion unbanked, but at the same time, he talks about how they're going to be making know your customer anti-money laundering compliance with these. The people that are unbanked are not going to be able to comply. So who are these? They're not looking for the 1.7 billion. They're looking for the middle and upper middle class in these countries beyond the core of Eurozone and the major industrial countries around the world and Asia, et cetera. He says Facebook and its closest partners think that they are large and powerful enough to swing a coup against the concept of government control of money. Libra directly states its intent is, quote, to shape a regulatory environment, end of quote, not to comply, but to shape.
To rewrite.
Regulators will need to bend to them. And he makes the point of this. They already demonstrate this in how they act around the world, where they're resisting to comply with subpoenas in Canada and the United Kingdom right now.
Facebook is?
Pardon me? Yeah.
Facebook is? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, they're not going to, it would be bad, it would be a bad look for them to not comply with our subpoenas. But who really pays attention to the Canadian court system?
Nobody.
And, you know, UK is...
There are like three judges there.
Yeah. The Libra token is a foreign exchange derivative. Yeah, it goes on to what we just talked. It says, quote, it will create a mirror banking system using your money. That was actually a quote from Carlos Mascleton, the head of treasury of Bitcoin payment group Yapo, which he said in a private WhatsApp chat group. But somehow we get to know that. It goes on a little bit more about the money laundering. The other hazard that he spoke is the what he calls the liberalization of the local economy. We're talking about Venezuela, and maybe if you had U.S. dollars, well, it probably wouldn't be too well received by the local police in Venezuela. But we can think of other African countries. In Uganda, I think if you had U.S. dollars, you might be able to buy stuff there.
Yep.
Kenya, other places, Nigeria, I would think. But just as unplanned dollarization, the dominance of U.S. dollars can cause crippling depreciation of local currencies, like we talked about, so could Libra, but faster. Dollarization is slowed by the requirement to procure physical dollars, but a vast supply of Libra tokens could be poured into the economy from the outside by phone. And Libra, and Facebook, and the Libra, well, the Libra Foundation, I should say, could just print them.
It's, what's it, Bretton Woods?
Yeah,
to replace the Bretton Woods Foundation.
Yeah, that was after World War II, right?
Yeah.
And then we had something with Nixon, and then we went off the gold standard. And yeah, that's ancient history. Don't think about that.
No.
Think about the Brave New World.
That's it. Libra.
So anyway, as we said, the Libra intends for transactions on the Libra blockchain to be synonymous. How do you think that? Users create a number of addresses for privacy. This appears at odds with Know Your Customer. Then go on there.
To me, this is a big sleight of hands now. I don't think it's a big sleight of hands.
Yeah.
How many countries are suing Facebook and all the regulatory stuff that's going on? Like you say, the subpoenas here and the subpoenas there. So they come out and make something even more.
Well, that's why they wanted Visa and MasterCard.
Yes.
And
so they bring them all in, and
yeah.
They go, oh, yeah, here, focus on this for a while we continue to screw everybody over into the
curtain over here.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's when recently U.S. House Financial Services Committee Republican Patrick McHenry said to Democrat Maxine Walters, we got to do something about this. And, of course, Maxine Walters said, I think you're right.
Yeah.
So we finally have something bipartisan for them to focus on. And let's see, I won't try and read all this. We've got French doing something. We've got the Bank of England doing something. We've got worried about creation of Shadow Bank. And it's all summed up by Sarah Jamie Lewis, the director of Canadian nonprofit Open Privacy. Can't wait for a cryptocurrency with the ethics of Uber, the censorship resistance of PayPal, centralization of Visa, all tied together with the proven privacy of Facebook.
That's good.
And I managed to wrap that up because I wanted to get to one more thing for you because you know about high-frequency trading algorithms.
Oh, yeah.
And some of this, I'm not focused so much on what does this mean to us trading our Bitcoin, that these high-frequency traders are coming in to the crypto exchange world. ErisX, Huobi, Gemini, they're all trying to attract these large algorithmic traders, giving them free co-location. In other words, they can bring their server and put it right next to the Gemini server.
They get that.
Yeah. no physical distance.
Microseconds.
At all.
Yeah.
But one of the things that as I went through this article, like I said, we could spend a lot of time on this, but it's the actual money that's coming in to the whole financial system of cryptocurrency. Huobi is based in Singapore, ErisX in Chicago. They both are offering co-location, and which we said is place the server in the same facility. This is joins Gemini, which has already been doing this at their data center in New York, and is about to offer it in Chicago too. Which it sort of boggles my mind. If you're doing trading in New York, and now you got to do it right next to where they're trading in Chicago, there's that much going on.
Yeah.
Because you know, most I think if you talk to most individuals like us, I hardly ever hear anybody say, "Oh yeah, I trade on Gemini."
I've never heard that.
Yeah. I mean,
well, you know why? You have to be an accredited investor.
I think you can be a retail investor.
Because I went on there one time to try to get on, and they said,
well, it was back when I checked. I thought it was like Bitcoin, Ether, and they didn't have Litecoin.
I thought I was buying a house on a hazmat site. You know, it was like all the paperwork. It was ridiculous.
Well, you may have been. So anyway, but Gemini does a lot. Is supposedly doing a lot of the over the counter, the big trades. Notably, none of these exchanges charge for services, seeing as a way to differentiate themselves. Now, not so much the quote I'm about to say, but think of the geography here. Quote, "It's our competitive advantage," said Andrei Grashev, head of Huobi Russia. Huobi Russia?
Is the Huobi the coin or the exchange?
The exchange.
H-O-U-B-I, right?
H-U-O-B-I.
And they're supposed to be coming in.
They already operate in the U.S. But I didn't realize they were this far along in Moscow.
Yeah.
The exchange's Moscow client office. Now, last week we did say that the Russian court system, which, you know, is fair and balanced, that Russian citizens can own cryptocurrency. They just can't use it to buy and sell things, except cryptocurrency. So somebody in Russia... Many people, we're going to see in a second, want to own cryptocurrency, and makes you go, why? Eric Wall, a former crypto blockchain lead at Cinnabar, financial technology company acquired by NASDAQ. It's big business. Everyone I've been speaking to that runs an exchange mentioned being approached by Wall Street types with these kinds of requests. Most crypto exchanges are not ready to satisfy the demand. There are very new concepts of many retail focus exchanges with no experience, et cetera. Okay. This is something, we go back to Russia. In the 6 months since Huobi opened its Russia office, around 50 clients, have taken advantage of the co-location service.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Are they hacking each other?
By locating their servers in the same cloud and using the same domain name service as the exchange. The options allow these clients to make 70 to 100 times faster trades than other users. Quote, "One of our clients makes about 800,000 trades a day, and there are more and more such clients." Unlike crypto exchanges use cloud-based servers, ErisX will be using a hardware matching machine at the Equinix data center in Secaucus. Mark should drop in on there. He should do a remote from there.
Yeah.
Coinbase, unusually, is not doing this, which makes you wonder about all those executives leaving Coinbase. And maybe they have maybe they're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel there. Anyway, let's get to that. The LGO Markets, which launched earlier this year, is taking the opposite report. Everybody gets trade the same. They batch the orders together. They all trade at once in 500 milliseconds. So it has to be faster than that. Isn't fast enough. Kraken's Vice President of Engineering, Steve Hunt, told CoinDesk something similar. And Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange, is not considering offering co-location. Anatoly Kondiakov told attendees of a recent elite investor meetup in Moscow. We're trying to protect our
retail
customers. Yes. So I managed to rather, but I mean, what does this mean about the real money around the world? Where is that going?
Yeah.
Bitcoin, 12,000, add another zero to that.
You absolutely could. Absolutely could.
Yeah. Maybe by next week.
And then I will be worth $20,000.
Yeah. And you can get one heck of a dinner at Mocha Joe's.
That's right.
With
that's
that.
Right.
So, All right. Well, we've managed to get through this on a fast pace. I appreciate Andy sticking around through all this. Phil, for when he was here. Next Monday, be sure and catch Talking Markets at 4:05. You know, did you preview what you're doing next week?
No, we don't know what we're doing next week.
Well,
it's too early.
Yes.
The market changes.
I often don't know what I'm doing until 6:05.
I think we need to know, our, you know, is this the end of the altcoin market? Is it the next .com? I mean, that's really what we need to talk about. I just don't see these altcoins surviving.
Oh, I tend to agree. And
Bitcoin Maximus. You trade enough altcoins in your life. If you've owned more than 40 altcoins in your life, then you will definitely become a Bitcoin Maximus.
And you've owned the top 20.
Yes, you've several of them.
Right.
20 times over.
Go to SeekingCryptos.com and check out what's going on there and sign up for the free preview if you haven't already. I'll join you there. We'll see you next week.